Hi guys, this is Ravish, who's online.
Hi Ravish, Adrian Berg here as well.
Hi Adrian.
Hello Ravish, Satrupa Bose here.
Hi Satrupa.
Hi, this is Jeff.
Hello Jeff. We'll give it a few minutes for others to join and then we can get started.
Sounds great.
I think, guys, we can get started. I do have a hard stop at 3:30 today, unfortunately, but I think we can get started and, someone can continue and take it to completion today. So just to quickly summarize, we talked about the decision tree and, framework for decision making on, is blockchain the right solution for you or not? I know we talked about various things and decided on, let's take, what are the key considerations? And we decided on each one of us is going to pick a topic and we'll kind of go through that and try to collate all that towards the end to, kind of give it a framework shape. And then obviously, being pair focused, we will then kind of tweak it to what will be, what will make sense from pair standpoint, whether the blockchain is a good solution for the use case that is being talked about. So that being said, I know Jeff, last time you presented kind of high level thoughts on, and we did, take back some responsibility that each one of us is going to discuss one topic or one block of, a key consideration. So we can cover that today. I know some, Tony is not online today because he could not make it. So I know he has a couple assignments. I know Steve had one, Jeff, you had two, and Rich, I believe there was one on your end as well, and I have two. So what I'm thinking is we'll go in sequence, and let's see how far we go there. And we will cover what we cannot cover today, we'll try to cover next week. And the idea is going to be kind of summarizing that in these two meetings and then putting something on paper so we can kind of start working through a framework or a white paper that can actually, give anyone an idea about the framework that we're talking about. I know in the general meeting, someone did raise a question about, do we really have to do this? And there were a bunch of frameworks out there in doing some research. I found like so many different kinds. That again, it bears a question how deep we want to go into this. I'll just take a pause there and, you know, have others share their thoughts, and then we'll get into the, you know, the each of the topic that we have to cover today. Any suggestions, questions, doubts anyone has?
Well, this is Jeff. I found a couple others as well, but they all seem to be tailored around particular use cases. I haven't found a generalized framework.
Yeah, I personally saw a lot of those were financial related. I for some reason I stumbled upon a lot of those, but you're right. I mean, it's not very general at this point in time. Someone else had a thought?
So I think they're the general ones end up being less useful. I've seen a lot of decision trees, and I think there's so much subtlety involved in each use case, the particulars, you know, when you're trying to make these decisions, that, you know, having a very specific one or a more specific one is ends up being more beneficial.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on that, because I think you can relate more to a specific one than to a general one. Because you're running a use case in your head while you know, kind of reviewing that, right? So I am, Jeff, correct me if I'm wrong. I think the idea here was to start general and then make it specific to, you know, this payer group or and payer industry.
I'm just not sure what that really means, because if you have a particular use case in mind, you can tailor it to that. Although the problem is it's kind of circular in that you're looking at it through a very shaded lens to begin with, because you have a particular use case in mind. It's kind of like what I saw in the donor milk case. I didn't see a justification for blockchain there, but they went plowing ahead because they wanted to do it. So they created a decision tree that said it's the right thing to do. But ultimately, it has to be of value for particular use cases. A general one that's too general to be useful doesn't provide any value to anybody.
Yeah, so I think what Adrian, you were saying is we are not talking about putting something very general. We are talking about a decision tree that eventually will be catering to the payer, you know, community. I mean, that's the focus of this group as well, right? I just don't want to lose the focus. However, we have to have a starting point, which would be, you know, talking about some of these fundamental pieces. Like, you know, we have these many writers, you know, divergent incentives, data, you know, so on and so forth. So I think we have to cover those topics, and then we will kind of synthesize the information in terms of, and Jeff, to your point, yes, if we look at a particular use case and start thinking about that just use case, I think that's one way to look at. The other way to look at is going to be in, for example, in payer industry, we have some key constituent types. There is a member, there is a provider, there is a payer, you know, so on and so forth. So I think there are those key constituents in the industry, and our payer-specific decision tree has to account for some of those key foundational constituent types. That's how I see this.
This is Mikhail here. I wanted to ask, who are you pitching this to? You know, is this going towards a set of executives at a health plan within the, you know, U.S. healthcare market, where you're trying to convince them to adopt this certain kind of infrastructure technology? And, you know, I think the decision tree has to basically be tailored, first of all, to a very specific set of decision makers. So we have to be clear about who they are, and also what is the business value that it's providing? You know, why should they take the take the trouble to implement something like this? Where in their technology or where in their business does it actually have an impact? and inevitably that's going to, you know, need to be driven down to more concrete details around whether you want to call it use cases or you want to call it service lines, you know, or areas of business. You know, without getting more concrete and being able to cite metrics, you know, to be able to say, you know, these are where you are spending X amount of dollars today. And this is where, you know, adoption of a blockchain solution could have an impact. And moreover, that, you know, we project that the impact may be, you know, Y number of dollars per year. It's going to cost you, you know, a certain amount to put it in and a certain amount to operate it. Is it going to be operational savings? Is it going to be reduction in fraud, you know, and abuse? Is it you know, where exactly is the tangible impact? And it has to be put in terms of very concretely defined operating areas, you know, that are technology related. So I just don't see how you can get away from getting more concrete in terms of the call it a use case or a service, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, so Mikhail, I think the question that you're referring to more of a ROI and what is the business value, I think that varies based on the use case, right? The question that we are trying to answer here is, you know, considering the characteristics of blockchain technology, what kind of problems are to be dealt with, and now relate those type of problems in payer industry and kind of surface this framework that can help, you know, filter. You know, you're right, at executive level, that at a higher level, what will make sense in this technology? You know, we like Jeff talked about donor milk, right? It can be done in a single, you know, simple database as well. Why blockchain, and what is the value it generates for that particular use case? I think that will vary based on the use case type. It may be a same type of implementation across various use cases, can generate various, you know, different business value. So I don't think we can kind of hone on at this point in time the, you know, dollars and the savings. The idea is going to be what technology problem it solves, or what problem it solves with technology that may not be addressable in current scenarios using regular, you know, transactional engines that we have today, right? Then comes the now I can solve these three or four types of problem in payer industry. If I bring a particular business use case, it can yield me, you know, savings from ABC perspective or XYZ dollars. I think that varies based on the use case, business use case. So I don't know how.
So, I mean, if we were to take, for example, provider credentialing, you know, that was something that was an area that had been thrown around as one possible, not only use case, but an area where POC could be done. You know, can we come up with a list of maybe a half dozen or a dozen similar, you know, at least high level use cases where we can actually put together a really short business case for each one? And that way, you know, once you aggregate that, then you're providing a very comprehensive, you know, industry-wide picture. But and from there, you can generalize, you know, commonalities across those different use cases.
I don't know when, you know, when you joined, but in the past, if you look at some of the previous meeting minutes, we have been talking about like four or five different use cases. One was around the provider data management. The other one was around value-based care. There was one around prior auths. So the reason why we are here today is a discussion around those use cases and then challenging ourselves. Is this use case a valid use case for blockchain or not? From which came the question, can we put together something that answers some of those, you know, fundamental questions before we get to a use case? So I think what you are describing is what we are trying to follow the journey, and hence we are here having the exact same discussion today. I don't know, Jeff or you know, Steve or folks who have been you know, part of those discussions. Mikhail, I don't know whether you were part of those discussions wherein we kind of went through in detail the business use cases that we felt might be a good idea about the blockchain, but we were not certain how to validate that. So I don't know if you were
Yeah.
In those discussions, but yes, those discussions happened earlier.
Yeah, I reviewed all the minutes of the meetings. I think it would be valuable to try to find some way to create a kind of a structured template to take all of the work that was done and try to frame it in a kind of a more structured model, you know, which could then turn into a decision tree.
Well, I think we are trying to create that model. I mean,
yeah,
we started out. This is Jeff. I kind of came up with this high level decision tree, but ultimately we realized we had to break it down more and model into smaller pieces before we could actually come up with the tree, which is what the current assignment has been. And I think we're actually in furious agreement, but I'm not certain.
I think, Mikhail, the issue is, what is the starting point? And what you are describing is exactly the thought process from groups that, I mean, this work group standpoint as well. It's just that, what is the starting thought? Is it a model that we will convert into a framework with the use cases? Or we talked about the use cases and now we are trying to figure out what model we put in place that becomes a framework for those use cases. So it's the exact same thought process, and we are actually in complete agreement. I think one thing that you just mentioned would be very valuable. As we understand some of these parameters, trying to put together as Jeff mentioned, framework, which in parallel, validating that framework against these use cases that we discussed to see, is it yielding us the right, are we getting the right outcome using this framework or not? Just one quick thought. Anyone who joined this meeting today that has not been there earlier, just introduce yourself, please. If not, no problem. We can proceed. So any other thoughts before we start working through the list that we had? Okay. So let's start with the list. I know, Jeff, in the picture that you had earlier, I don't know if you can, do you want to throw that on the screen? Or let me...
Yeah, I'll do that. I can do that.
So we can kind of...
Excuse me. Let me see. I don't seem to be... Oh, here it is.
Okay, we see it now.
Well, yeah, okay. So here was the original kind of very high level beginning, and I didn't consider this an end. And then these are the areas that we then broke into sections to look at them individually, because it doesn't really necessarily flow so smoothly as it would appear in this description. And as long as I'm showing, I took on two areas here. One was hegemony, I decided really what you had is it was really more like this than like that.
And I think the second one was the data.
Yeah, and the integrity. Data one is incoming data integrity was here. And I think... we can eventually try to put all these building blocks together, but I think it's important to kind of model the individual decisions first, because they aren't necessarily simple yes-nos as I had in that overview picture that I first showed.
Yeah. So, Jeff, should we start from beginning, like multiple writers, and then we can kind of...
That's fine. That's fine. It's just I was showing, so I had what I could show. I figured as long as I was up there, because the many writers was somebody else. But I'll keep this.
So that Yeah, so many writers was me. Okay. So let me quickly cover that. This is actually a simple one to cover. You know, blockchain by nature requires multiple writers, right? So any of the frameworks that I have visited or reviewed or had a chance to go through, every single one of them had this question about, you know, multiple participants and that, you know, that that's a must in order to, you know, talk about blockchain or distributed ledger solutions. So that's kind of a prerequisite. There was a violent agreement across the board that I saw that that's something that is very clear. If you have multiple constituent types or multiple writers, that's a good one to look at. However, if you are the only one writing the data in blockchain, then the question is going to be, do you really want blockchain? Because the issues that it solved with multiple writers was reconciliation of multiple data sources because of multiple writers. And it tried to address the inconsistencies, you know, across multiple writers by virtue of these distributed ledger and the consensus algorithms that have been implemented. I did come across one question that is that something I wanted to discuss just to blow up this decision, you know, box a little more. Number one, are there multiple writers? And number two, there was a use case that was being talked about, like if there is a certification authority issuing a certificate that is, you know, publicly verifiable. In those scenarios, it will be only that entity writing the information. Do we need blockchain for that? And I just wanted to bring this question to the table with, you know, to talk about if, you know, just extending that thought process from, you know, payer perspective, when we talk about the, you know, I would say eligibility or verification of insurance policy, would they, in that case, there will always be a single writer. The question is, with the single writer, you don't have inconsistency of data sources because it's the same writer writing the data. So in those scenarios, is this really a viable solution, even if the writer is a single writer? Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think one question that comes up is not whether you're talking about a single writer, but are there different writers within a single organization that are acting independently? And therefore, the consensus mechanism reflects maybe a division of responsibilities in decision-making. So, for example, if we're talking about pre-authorization, you know, and obtaining advance approval for a certain procedure, you know, to what extent does the blockchain technology support the process of doing reviews of medical necessity, for example, an application of guidelines to a certain coverage decision? So it could be that, you know, there's different stakeholders potentially within the same health plan or within the same organization that have different responsibilities in terms of reviewing and approval. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah. I think that's a very good example to talk about a single writer from organization perspective, but there are multiple writers within the organization on the same, you know, data source. Like, for example, you know, pre-auth is a perfect example wherein, you know, there is a business unit involved in, you know, the coverage from coverage perspective, and then the clinical, you know, or the medical policy group involved in medical affairs group involved in deciding the medical necessity. So all have to work together. That's a good consideration, I would say.
Yeah, I think the CA example that you gave, the certificate authority example, you don't really have a single writer. You might have a single certificate authority, but multiple people are contributing the information that the certificate authority then uses to approve and to revoke. I mean, revocation could be initiated by somebody outside their certificate authority. I think you'd want, you aren't just looking at the process of having a certificate on the blockchain. It's the process of validating the certificate, revoking it if necessary, renewing it as necessary. I think there are multiple writers in that process.
I think, Jeff, what you're describing, I mean, the way I am understanding this is, there might be a single certificate of authority, but multiple contributors to the information that actually results in the certification.
Right.
They may not be writing to the blockchain, but they are the contributors of the data.
Yes.
But it's beyond that. It's also a distributed decision-making process, right? So, I mean, we're talking about something that is at not a data or transactional level, but at a higher level, kind of a business decision making or clinical decision making process.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the many writer. I think the point is that there are still many writers in that example. So I'm not sure that we have a counterexample that we have to deal with. It's just a matter of interpreting, that use case of a certificate authority is recognizing that there are many writers, because it's like the end result is a certificate or not. It's kind of like a Bitcoin. You know, a Bitcoin is a Bitcoin, but you have many people involved in moving them around.
Mm-hmm. So you are seeing still that example as the multiple writers itself.
Yes.
Just that how they are engaging with the overall process might be, might be different. But if outcome is the synthesis of that information to result in some outcome.
Yes. I mean, it's the same. Think about it in the payer authorization model. You either authorize or you don't authorize, but you need to get data from various. The process itself to come up with that decision involves many writers.
Can I ask a clarifying question?
Sure.
So when we are talking about the writers, are we also assuming that the writers are responsible for reconciliation or the consensus of the information being written, or are we assuming that there could be a different set of nodes that are doing the consensus from the writers?
This is Jeff, and just my particular opinion is it could be either or. I don't think that many writers' decision itself, I think it's agnostic to whether or not they are the people who also, work on consensus.
Okay. Yeah, that's. I just wanted to clarify that. So we're simply talking about multiple sources of information that could lead to
multiple contributors to what actually gets posted on the blockchain.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a governance process too. I mean, you really are talking about a decision-making model or a platform for supporting decision-making and ensuring, appropriate levels of traceability and visibility into how decisions were made. So, why was a certain coverage decision, either approved or denied? And what was the information used to make that decision, and who were the parties involved in the decision making? So there's kind of a governance process and a lot of value that can be brought to bear if you kind of raise the level of abstraction from simply writing blocks of data to a ledger.
Mm-hmm.
We're at your hard stop, Ravish, I believe.
It's three. Actually, it's already 3:30. Time went by really fast.
Yes.
So, Jeff, I will have to drop off. Can you continue the meeting and take it to completion? And let me quickly summarize who has what. and then hopefully I think we'll have to continue the conversation next week to get to finish line. On the list, I have just following your flow. So incentives, I believe it was Tony, and he's not here today. So we'll have to skip that one for next week. And then hegemony is, Jeff, it's you. Next one, data integrity, it's you. And then parties, untrusted, it's Rich. Tampering was me, so I will take it up next week. Attack and incentive was Steve. And then again, recourse was Tony. So I'll just take a quick, check. Hopefully, if Jeff, you can quickly publish where we stopped this week so we can continue next week, or what is pending for next week. We'll take it from there.
Well, I'm happy to leave the discussion. I don't know if I'm going to have time to document anything. I'm just buried right now. But
no, just what were covered, so I know what is to be covered next week.
Okay. We'll do.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
All right. So since Tony's not here for item number two, we'll move on to item number three, which is hegemony. And wrong direction. So let me actually, I've kind of text here. Is that text big enough to be visible if I do this?
It looks fine. I mean, I can read it.
Okay. I mean, the main thing is hegemony is, I think, one of the really big issues that kind of gets kind of bundled into this idea of decentralization, which to me is not a single concept. It's multiple concepts, one of which is hegemony. And I think what the reason to decentralize the architecture is often to avoid one party having control. Actually, to decentralize the governance is to prevent one party from controlling the system to his own benefit and the disadvantage of the other parties. And so if the solution provider is likely to exercise undesirable influence over the solution process integrity, then I think that would be a reason you'd want to consider blockchain. Does that make sense?
I'm still reading your text.
Okay, yeah, it's lengthy text, so I'll give you guys some time.
Is this document available just for download if it's not possible to read online during the meeting?
I can try to figure out a way to post it. I'm not sure when I'm going to get to it, but I'm happy to.
Sure.
I'm not trying to keep it close held, if that's the question.
Read too much of the text at the moment, but Yeah, we can work out some way of getting some of this onto the wiki as well.
Yes, but at the risk of some people still reading and not finishing, the key thing was if there's likely hegemony, blockchains to be considered. If there's not likely hegemony, it doesn't mean you shouldn't consider blockchain. It just means that it's kind of it's not a consideration. It just kind of goes nowhere. It doesn't tell you anything. So no doesn't mean don't use blockchain. No means don't use this as a decision criterion.
Now, even in a blockchain solution, say for example, the blockchain that Walmart built with its suppliers for the food from the farm to grocery store.
Right, farm to table.
Mm-hmm. There, Walmart being such a big player, even though it's a blockchain solution, can it be a powerful enough entity that controls um, I'm not sure what it would control that would be detrimental or that would make it a monopoly, but it is possible, right, that in a business blockchain that...
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's a problem. And I would say in that case, the answer is yes. The solution provider is likely to exercise undue influence. So you'd want to consider a blockchain. Blockchain doesn't by itself solve it. You still need to end up then coming up with some governance rules that all the non-Walmart, you know, all Walmart's trading partners are willing to agree to. I mean,
yes. So the governance in blockchain really.
So considering blockchain isn't dispositive, you might, if you can't then come up with the right governance model, then blockchain doesn't necessarily buy you anything.
But by the same token, whoever has hegemony is not likely to adopt blockchain. This is not a great argument for them to adopt unless there were some regulatory basis for that. You know, if CMS told all the health plans they had to implement a blockchain for purposes of auditing their clinical, you know, their coverage decisions, for example, that would be kind of forcing the technical decision on them, which they would otherwise perhaps not want that level of, you know, visibility. So, I mean, you know, it is a governance decision, but it may be one that is driven by the external regulatory environment.
Quite possibly. I mean, all this limited model is saying is it's really not dispositive one way or the other. It says consider blockchain. It doesn't say use blockchain. If you have a yes, and if you have a no, it's, you know, it don't even consider this as a decision criterion. So if you consider blockchain, then somewhere else along the line, you have to consider, does your governance model address this hegemony problem? Because the alternative is that the you know, all the trading partners decide to not play. Now it turns out that's highly unlikely, because somebody, it's kind of like strike breaking. It's like if the other guys decide to boycott Walmart, they'll just keep searching for suppliers till they find somebody who'll play along with the game. But if they also come up with rules that they don't really exercise their hegemony. The fact that they implement this and demand it of their suppliers in and of itself isn't an unfair advantage. They're doing it, and their motivation for doing it isn't to take advantage of their suppliers. It's not like they're demanding some kind of confidential pricing information or supply information. They just want to be able to do this so that reduces their costs, so when the next lettuce scare comes up, they can find the right batch and not have to throw out all the lettuce in the network.
Well, I think that also depends a little bit on the use case. I don't want to discount. I've done a lot of blockchain consulting around, you know, supply chain use cases, and I think that you're exactly right on kind of the hegemony issue, where the suppliers really do not necessarily want to be forced onto a platform that, you know, if they already have their own, you know, internal system that they've built up. Let's say, you know, they have been an SAP client for a long time. They've already streamlined all of their internal processes, and they're not willing to maybe adopt something that, you know, Walmart wants. So all of these different dynamics in terms of the business, as well as the data ownership, we have seen instances where, you know, companies are trying to creep, you know, early into the value chain to get more data on, you know, their suppliers, trying to cut out some of the middlemen.
Mm-hmm.
And that has typically not gone especially well. And that's why, again, you don't hear a lot of success stories around, you know, blockchain at this time.
Right. Well, as I say, nothing in this simplified model is dispositive. It's merely, one is to consider it, and one is, don't even consider this as a decision criterion. And so that's kind of the subtlety that we realized was missing in the net overall model that was showing before. But I think the one of the points here that I'm not sure who's talking, because I have to keep this up, I think, in order to for you to be able to see it, is losing my train of thought here. Oh, though you still need to somewhere along the line, if you have a yes here, then you need some other governance decision to decide whether blockchain is actually going to solve the hegemony problem.
Yeah, that footnote would be good to have. This is Satrupa. Jeff, if you click on participants, it'll pull up a ribbon to the right.
Well, if I change my screen, will it change what you're seeing? I guess is my concern. Are you still seeing the same thing?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm just not familiar with Zoom and how it works. Okay, so I can accept that I just see a blank screen. So I can't see where participants are.
Oh, on mine it's at the bottom.
Yeah, but I don't see anything. Maybe I'm in the wrong place. Let me try this. No, I can't actually get to the Zoom page. I can either. Anyway, maybe it's my computer. But to your suggestion, Satrupa, of adding a footnote, so maybe I'll add down at the bottom here. If the answer to the above decision is yes, we may need another decision block to consider whether governance solves the problem. Okay, I'll bring this down for the moment, and then the next. Any more comments on this particular one? I'll go to the next one, which is incoming data integrity. So if there's not a problem with the integrity of the data coming in, this again was kind of a no op. It means if the answer is no, just don't use it as a decision criteria. You still may want to use blockchain, but if there is a problem with incoming data integrity, then blockchain is something to be considered. And so then you move on to the second box. Will blockchain help detect or resolve this problem? And if it doesn't, then you're going to have to fix the problem somehow. If blockchain can help detect or resolve the problem, then you'd continue to want to consider blockchain. But again, it's not dispositive. It's just one more element. And these things may just all line up as separate decision elements that kind of really don't necessarily get linked. Does that make sense to people?
Could you give an example of identity issue? Are you thinking of credentialing?
Well, let's say somebody could be credentials. An easiest example is you have a counterfeiter who says that he, has 10 widgets, and you know that there are counterfeiters out there who are trying to sell these things as authentic. So there's a problem with the potential problem with the incoming data. You don't know if the supplier is actually giving you legitimate or illegitimate items.
Hmm.
In that case, blockchain could help detect or resolve the problem, because you could then find out where his upstream came from. using blockchain or what ingredients he used, perhaps if he was the manufacturer, if he was using parts that met spec or not, parts or elements.
I mean, in healthcare, you've got a lot of problems with counterfeit drugs. That seems like one one area. I wonder whether you could also include things like revenue cycle, fraud and abuse, you know, so filing false claims, inappropriate, you know, there's a wide range between outright fraud and manipulation of, for example, claims data, you know, all the way into correct coding problems. You know, it can take on a very subtle flavor, but you know, arguably you could throw that all into the integrity bucket as well.
Agreed. Do you think this model will cover those different scenarios?
Well, again, it depends on what sort of tools you're using with the blockchain. You know, for example, you know, if, for example, the mechanism of sort of consensus does involve some level of pre-adjudication review, for example, then you could kick out, you know, all of the claims if you stick with revenue cycle. And you could apply a whole lot of value-added logic on top of that, including coverage policies and so forth. You know, I'm not sure whether, you know, on the inbound side, you know, whether that's the best place to do that. But certainly, you know, there are, you know, maybe not as much in the health system of the USA anymore, but in the rest of the world where health plans are, you know, in some ways still in a nascent stage, there's a huge temptation to engage in fraudulent, you know, billing practices and very weak controls over that. So I think the potential for an impact is enormous, depending on who else, you know, has visibility into the data and who is part of the governance of the consensus mechanism. So, you know, is the payer obligated to share this information with the insurance provider, which might be a public agency. So if you have a contractor that is doing the healthcare plan on behalf of the government, and you're including, let's say, the patient, you know, just as an example, as a party to the information flow, and you're providing value added tools that allow a patient or their family to have, you know, access to the billing information that's being submitted on their behalf, then that level of transparency may actually go a long way towards reducing, you know, fraud and abuse, which in many systems may be, you know, at a very high level because of poor governance and poor controls. So this seems like it could be a very strong selling point for a lot of decision makers. You know, depending on, again, on the jurisdiction, you know, whether we're talking about the Indian healthcare system, or we're talking about a system in Latin America or the UK, or, you know, I think the context, the magnitude of the problem will be different, you know, in each health system. But I think everyone struggles with this, you know, it's almost universal.
Right. Well, if I, let me see if I can summarize what you're saying. I think what you're saying is, again, we don't end up, if we follow the yeses here, we don't have a dispositive conclusion. It's merely, we're still in the consider a blockchain. There's still many other, the idea is all these different criteria we're looking at get stacked up. And if they all seem to point to a blockchain, that's pretty, you know, maybe we'll end up weighting them even to decide the blockchain is the right solution. It might also then just go to, there might be a business case element also that we haven't even, we're just looking at the technical side right now. But we're not saying if you get two yeses, it's definitely a blockchain solution. So what blockchain solution you then get to once you're considering it is a different, is a further down the pipe decision. Is that?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think we can also, in this situation, point to blockchain solving problems that may not be solvable using other technical design alternatives. This is a situation where potentially the capacity of blockchain to to solve certain problems in more elegant ways, you know, maybe at a lower cost of acquisition and operation than other technical alternatives. Maybe, you know, part of the decision making process, or you know, key differentiator. But yeah, you're right. There's a lot of you know, use case specific value propositions, you know, that and especially in terms of quantifying the magnitude of some of these data integrity problems, fraud and abuse problems, compliance problems, you know, that could only strengthen the argument for going in this direction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have a comment, Jeff.
Yeah,
this is Rich. You know, being a data warehouse architect, when I read about data integrity, okay, I think at two different levels. I what I'm hearing you guys talk about is the data truthful, right? Versus is the data.
It's more information assurance than just data integrity. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, because I think of referential integrity, data types, and is it a zero, one, is it text? You know, those kinds of things come to mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to get into the weeds here, but when I start hearing how you talk in there, it sounds to me as if when you talk about integrity, it means truthfulness. No?
More like data veracity.
I'm happy to change it to that. Is that something people think is a good idea?
Well, I'm just saying it's veracity.
That was my initial question, which is why I asked for an example, is what did integrity mean? So yeah.
I think data veracity is an excellent suggestion. I think that is really what I was talking about here.
So,
and then we already have this in the notes, but when we say, will blockchain help detect, resolve this problem, maybe a little explanation on which aspects of blockchain help detect or resolve this kind of problem. Like,
well, here's some text that I have to go along with this as well. See if that addresses what you need.
I can't quite read it, but you described it when you were explaining to me, which is the provenance tracking,
mm-hmm.
is really the aspect of blockchain that would be helpful.
Okay, well, this one is short, so maybe I'll read it to everybody so that everyone can. Incoming data veracity addresses the quality of the data coming into the system. The concern is that having an immutable blockchain data structure is of little value if the data being recorded is of poor quality. Garbage in equals garbage out. Poor quality data has at least two sources. One source arises when the data writer intentionally attempts to game the system. And that's probably enough. Another source arises from data that are difficult to characterize without ambiguity. This need not be the result of a data writer trying to game the system. If a case of pharmaceuticals is swapped out in transit that have the same identity labels as the authentic originals, the recipient of that shipment may be unaware that the received goods are counterfeit at the time they are received. And again, I don't think we have to go into the details, but I think the idea of changing this to data veracity is actually an excellent suggestion. Recognizing the input data integrity or data veracity problem is important because it cannot be solved. The blockchain will merely serve to propagate bad information. Until this problem is solved, any attempt at a solution may be flawed. So that's kind of why there was the fix the problem if blockchain can't fix it. And then at the bottom, in some cases, blockchain may be an important part of solving this incoming data veracity problem. For example, in the pharmaceutical solution described above, the reporting of the sale of the original authentic case can be detected by the blockchain that tracks change of ownership. A manual investigation would likely be needed to determine which case is authentic and which case is fraudulent, but once the authentic case is determined, correcting entries can be made in the blockchain. So.
Hmm.
What other comments do we have on this? And have I addressed everyone's concerns? Or you said, Arupa, did I address what you were trying to?
Yes, this explains, the example at the end explains what blockchain can or cannot do. I think that is a very important consideration for blockchains, understanding exactly where it can help with the veracity and where it cannot.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Rich, are you on? Is Rich on the line?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. So let me just scroll up here. Oops. Bring this back down. So parties untrusted. You have 3 minutes.
Yeah, I know. Well, I can just start the screen share while other participants are sharing. Can I take the screen?
Okay. Let me figure out how to get rid of it. I'll stop share. That's pretty straightforward. Okay.
I just made a copy of that. Can everybody see it?
Yep.
All right. Well, this is kind of like my attempt to try and understand what parties untrusted means, where I talked about trust on a trustless foundation. And I did some research and stuff like that. And what I came up with was a diagram that you don't see just yet. But I just wanted to start by saying that there's a guy back in the 1800s, forgive me, a little history lesson in the United States. His name was Josh Tatum. And what he did was, when the U.S. Mint came out with a new nickel, it was deemed the Liberty Head nickel, and the reverse side had a large Roman numeral 5 stamped on it. The new nickel did not have the word cents or nickel stamped on it, and Josh Tatum noticed this, and in fact, it was nearly the same size as a $5 gold piece. So what he did was he decided to start gold electroplating the metal so he could get $5 from a nickel. Okay, so hence, if you ever heard the saying, just joshing you, this is the perceived source for that.
Cool.
Meaning that, are you fooling me kind of thing. So I wanted to start off by saying that first. And I also looked up veracity, but back to can you all see my screen still?
Yes.
Okay, so I started this by talking about trust, and I ended up talking more about risk. And the reason why was because I had to change it to trusted party, because untrusted party didn't make any sense to me. In other words, what you're saying in the first diagram was that we were going to, if it's an untrusted party, use blockchain. And I'm thinking, well, I don't know if it's that simple or not. I think that you can have a trusted party, but there are degrees of risk involved in that. And for those who's ever done project management plans, there's a lot of things you can do when it comes to risk in a project. You can mitigate the risk, you can transfer it, or you can avoid it, or you can accept it. So what I was thinking was that when you get to this particular decision, all right, can you trust the party or not? All right, I don't think it's just that simple. Or is it an untrusted party? Move forward. It just doesn't make sense to me. So I decided to say, okay, what's the risk in utilizing or working with a third party or someone that there's absolutely no way you can trust. All right. Well, you can accept the risk and move forward to tampering, or you can determine the degree of risk you want to take in doing the transaction. So mitigate means you can try to minimize the risk by doing, depending on the situation. You can transfer the risk. For example, you can take out insurance or whatever, or you can avoid it altogether and just not do it.
So that's pretty much what I was thinking in this particular line item. And I know we're at 4 o'clock, but anyway, I guess something to think about till next week.
I think this is a very good thought process you're going through. And I'll just give you some other quick feedback. I think one of the other issues is, you know, what recourse is there? Although it might be one of the other blocks, decision blocks, I'm not sure. But yeah, I think you're right. It is more of a risk decision because it's not like there's only zero or one as far as trust.
Right.
And that was actually the point of this exercise, is to break those blocks down into the many components. So.
Right. So that's what I came up with. And I have other things here. Some of the research and reading I did.
But this is just it doesn't give us guidance as to if we want, the next step is, there's a lot of outcomes here, but none of them that determine whether or not we should use blockchain. So we need to then link that to the final for next week.
All right.
Okay. All right. Well, we're out of time. So I appreciate everyone's participation and we'll pick this up next week, I suppose.
Jeff, or someone, will you post the document so we can read it before next week's meeting?
How do I do that? I'm happy to do so.
Probably on the wiki, there should be a place to just upload a file.
Okay.
Or Rain.
I'm not sure.
Rain.
Rain's not on.
I can help with that. I mean, I've been kind of doing a lot of work on the wiki recently. but it's pretty straightforward, you know.
I don't even know if I know where the wiki is. Just to make fun of it.
If you want, I can. If there's a file share or someplace, you can make it available or email it to me. I can post it on your behalf if you'd like. It's whatever's easiest for you.
Give me your email address.
Sure, I'll put it on the chat.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I can do that this afternoon. I'll put it up in, so you can find a link to it from the homepage. We've kind of got two different landing pages now, but I'll make it accessible to everyone from either. And then I'll just send another link to it via the main chat, not the Zoom chat.
Fair enough. Thanks very much. I appreciate it, Mikhail.
Sure.
Thanks. All righty.
Anybody else?
No. Okay.
Thank you all. Have a great day.
Thanks. Bye.